Comics.
Movies.
Music.
Video games.
Technology.
Blu-ray.
Television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
Recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is
Abe. Hello.
Hey. Out Now is a film podcast as Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We also bring in discussion about the latest movie trailers, box office results and predictions, a callback to past films similar to the main film of the week, games, and other fun stuff. This is episode 62, and the main films of the week, emphasis on plural apparently, very deep emphasis, right, Abe? We like... our main films of the week, we are going to be talking about Pixar's latest, Brave, and Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. That's right, it's a double episode, two films very similar to each other. Not in any way, actually, made that up. That's what we're going to be doing. And joining us to discuss both Brave and Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, well, some of us will be joining us for both. We have writer for Fast Film Reviews and personal enemy to director Adam Shankman, Mark Hoban.
Hey, everyone.
Writer for The Rack Focus and amateur archer hoping to participate in next year's Hunger Games, Maxwell Haddad.
Hello, everybody.
And the newest guest, writer for Examiner.com and closing in on his fifth time seeing That's My Boy in theaters.
Nice. Yeah.
Marcus Robinson.
Oh, that's me, yes. Yeah.
My boy, okay.
Can't wait.
How are you doing today?
Great. I'm great.
It's the early morning podcast. You know what? I didn't do this last time when we first had Maxwell on, but I'm going to ask both of you, since you're both kind of our newest guests to the podcast. I'll ask Maxwell first. What is The Racked Focus, Maxwell?
The Racked Focus is a film website I founded with a gentleman named Nathan Donerum. And we just like to call it a thoughtful approach to film criticism.
Great. And Marcus, could you explain your work at theexaminer.com?
I just do movie reviews, criticisms, try to see at least two movies a week that are going to hit the top 10 in box office. You know, that's it.
Great.
Cool. Give my take, my awesome. Critical take.
Awesome. We're always happy to have new guests on Out Now, so... We hope you just don't ruin the experience for all of us. It'll be great.
No.
Okay, so a few announcements. As always, let's start with the first and easiest one. Of course, iTunes reviews and ratings. Always happy to get those. Very helpful to the show. Very simple to do. Helps the show out. It's nice to do. It's cool. Let's see. Quick one to everyone that sent me messages or some kind of communication in the past week. I'm just gonna say thank you. That's it. And let's see. Questions. Do we have any questions this week? I think we did. Or not necessarily questions, but we did get an email. And I do like the emails that we get. So here we go from a loyal listener, Mike Blakemore. I'm just going to read this one. Hey, guys. I was listening. This is how I assume Mike Blakemore talks. He just like really lowers his voice. Hey, guys. I was listening to another great episode about Now. I'll just throw it, if I threw in the flattery because we needed it. Abe, in a throwaway line, mentioned that you are left-handed, referring to me, I guess. I knew there was a reason I liked you better than Abe. I am also left-handed. Do you have a favorite left-handed present? Mine was a pair of expensive scissors that I got one Christmas that I still use. Looking forward to the Abe Lincoln review. Loyal listener, Mike Blakemore. Yes, Mike, I am left-handed. Abe, you are not left-handed, correct?
No, I'm not.
Yep.
Did he really put in the letter that he preferred you to?
Yes, I did.
Yes. He's done that a couple times.
You added that.
It's in bold. It's not in bold, but it's in the email.
Mike wouldn't be that cruel.
To answer the question, my favorite left-handed present, I have a book of famous left-handers that I got once that made me happy.
Ned Flanders.
Yep.
The Leftorium.
The left hand, the one-stop shop for the left-handed use. Okay, so that's that one. Let's see, a couple more now. We got a few announcements this week, actually. Summer Movie Gamble just did the latest update in that regard since we had our G.I. Joe update. A new one just emerged. Abe, I don't know if you saw this. The Bourne Legacy was pushed back a week.
Oh, no, I didn't see that yet.
In order to distance itself from the release date of the Dark Knight Rises, a little indie film I heard about. I think that's going to be pretty big. Which Universal literally acknowledged in their like official press release that it states something like, given the popularity of the movies like Avengers and the upcoming Dark Knight Rises, we've decided to push back Bourne Legacy a week to August 10th. It was going to come out August 3rd in order to maximize the audience experience for properly having time to see the Dark or the Bourne Legacy, with something to that extent. So yeah, Bourne Legacy has been moved back a week, which makes complete sense to me, given that, yeah, it is coming out 2 weeks after the Dark Knight Rises destroys the world. And and because it also comes out the same day as Total Recall.
Which I really hope that Dark Knight destroys the world based on my predictions.
No, I'm pretty sure it's in the Mayan drawings. Like, at the end of the timeline, it's...
That's the reason that 2012 is supposed to be the last year.
The calendar ends, and then there's a bat signal. That's how it works in the Mayan... That's how it's in the Mayan drawings, and that's how it is in 2012, actually. There's a deleted scene, actually, where John Cusack in a limo is driving by in South America, and he's like, oh, look, it's Batman! Then he can't, like, finish his sentence. It's like... Just the pyramid blows up. It's insane.
In his limo.
Overplats there. He's like, what's going on? Chiwetel Ejiofor is like, we don't have time for this. He's really serious, as always, because he's Chiwetel Ejiofor. I just really wanted to plug the fact that I can say Chiwetel Ejiofor three times in one sentence. But okay, moving on. How do we even get there? Because the Bourne Legacy. Alright, last week, Liz was on, a friend of the show, Liz Manichel. And she promoted her her Kickstarter project for her film, Bread and Butter, the movie. And we're going to, you know, plug that once again. Abe, you want to kind of explain once again what we're doing?
Absolutely, yeah. What we're doing is, if you listen to the show, or I guess if you're listening now, what you can do is you can help Liz out with donations to fund her film at Kickstarter. We'll have a link in the show notes. You can essentially, I think it's a minimum donation of, if you donate $35, you can...
It's $25.
$25, I'm sorry. $35 is actually what I was donating.
That's
$25,
cut, right? That's your cut that you take, Abe.
Yeah. you can, I guess, be entered into a drawing to be a special guest on the Out Now with Aaron and Abe show. So it's $25 to help Liz with her film, and you can be on this pretty cool show. So, you know, think about it, and it's helping everybody out. It's a win-win-win-win. That's what Aaron said last week.
Win-win-win-win, exactly. And yeah, you know, $25 to be a guest on the show seems like a pretty cool offer. And you know, you help Liz's movie out. That's nice. Yeah. And yeah, we're just wishing luck to Liz. She's a friend of the show, of course. So it's cool that she's doing that. She's trying to make a movie. So, you know, good on her. Oh, speaking of Liz, actually, she of course is a part of the web series Just Seen It, and I was actually a guest on there, as we've had her as a guest on our show a couple times. She invited me to be a guest on their show, and so I actually got to do a video review for Brave with them this past week, which I'll also put in the show notes, because I know everyone is very curious to see whether or not I am more handsome than Abe. the official jury is still out on that, so, you know, I'm hoping
is that... Is it really here?
It is, yeah, so I'm hoping that the slants will lean that way, knowing that I'll have video footage of myself somewhere. Okay, last, we've had a lot of announcements this week. Last announcement, I'm announcing a contest. I didn't even tell Abe about this till just now. Another contest. We have a Pixar contest, and this one is incredibly, incredibly simple. However, I'm going to state right away that anyone that has won something in the past from our show cannot enter this contest, just because we want to, you know, get more people into this. I know there are some loyal listeners, such as Mike Blakemore, who, you know, hates Abe. That you know, that he died. He just instantly just like, I need to enter this contest right away. By the way, I was frantically moving my hands up and down to suggest that's how he types. By the way, you can't see that, but I want to describe the experience of that. But yeah, we're gonna limit this to people that have, you know, not entered contests before. And all you have to do is name your favorite Pixar character and why, and, you know, a few sentences to like a paragraph. That's incredibly, you know, incredibly simple. You know, all you have to do is email that to outnowpodcast@gmail.com, and you will win a Pixar prize. And I'm not going to tell you exactly what that prize is, except I'll say that it's DVDs from the director of MI3-4, Ghost Protocol. MI3. Mission Impossible. I said that completely wrong. I want you to edit that out, but you're not going to. Yeah, the director of Mission Impossible 4 Ghost Protocol. Films directed by him will be sent your way if you are to be the first to name your favorite Pixar character and why in an email at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. I think you can kind of guess what those two movies may be, but, you know, why say them out loud? Why not, really? But I'm not going to. I'll probably recap the contest at the end of the show. But yeah, there's that. Okay? Sound cool?
That sounds awesome.
I thought so. Now that we finally ended the announcements, let's kick off the Know Everybody section, where we try to set the tone for this podcast by asking each other a few questions, better get to know everybody. And let's start off with Mark this week.
Okay, Princess Merida from Brave is an archer, and it seems like 2012 is the year of archery. We've got Katniss from The Hunger Games, Hawkeye from The Avengers, William, her childhood pal from Snow White and the Huntsman.
Sterling and Archer from the TV show series Archer.
And Princess Merida from Brave. Let's see, Marcus, which is your favorite archer from 2012?
It's got to be the Princess Merida. Is that how you say it? Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be her. She's got balls. The other one's didn't. Can you say that? Can I say that on a podcast?
Say balls. Yeah, why not?
Okay, all right. She's feminist personified.
Katniss
okay.
is pretty tough herself, too.
Yeah, she's all right. She's all right.
No. She had help from the Tracker Jackers. So.
I would come on. Certainly come like on. See them in a bow off.
no way. I will direct it at Aaron.
Okay.
This is a vampire question. Actually,
as long as it's not a Prometheus question, we're good.
Oh, okay. All right. How do you prefer your vampires? Dreamy and sparkly or cold and bloodthirsty?
Medium rare.
Medium rare?
I prefer my vampires to be to be a little... A little dark, a little bloodthirsty, not too fancy in the dress. I don't need a fancy vampire. One that's more, you know, kind of rough in it. One of those vampires. All right. Let's see. Maxwell. What do you consider to be the weirdest Pixar story, the weirdest premise for a Pixar movie?
I think the weirdest premise for a Pixar story is probably Up.
That's a good answer.
I think it's the hardest to wrap one's head around when you just hear the premise. And even though it's, as we all know, unexpectedly great, the adventures of an old man and his chubby Boy Scout sidekick is a little peculiar.
I hope that becomes a Batman comic, right?
All right, this one will be for Mark. If in 20 to 30 years... someone decides to make a mashup film focusing on Barack Obama, what would you like to see him fight?
I'd like to see him fight Godzilla. I don't really feel like that. I don't feel like that film has been remade properly, and I think that would be a good monster for him to like attack and take care of. So yeah, I liked Obama versus Godzilla.
There was Bambi versus Godzilla. It's quite popular.
Yeah, I think Obama can do a better job than Bambi did, if you've seen that movie.
that lengthy film.
He wasn't too successful.
No, that's a show note.
He gave it a good try, but...
Let me add something to that.
Sure.
Barack Obama. At a Comic-Con a few years ago, I saw a comic frame for Barack Obama versus the Army of Darkness. Which is basically, it was Barack Obama in place of Bruce Campbell in like a comic version of the Army of Darkness. And so I did that. I was that for Halloween one year, and that was quite enjoyable.
You'll have to post pictures.
I will.
Yeah, exactly.
It's in the show notes. It will be in the show notes.
Show notes. Yes!
Guarantee it. Guarantee it.
All right. Abe.
Yes.
Princess Merida is a redhead. Who is your favorite ginger?
That is a great question. Going through the list...
That you already have prepared.
Yes. Because I saw this at the time. I'm really stumped.
I can give you like a few ideas.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That'd be
okay. So there's Dave. Emma Stone, Nicole Kidman, Julia Roberts, Amy Adams, Julianne Moore,
Lindsay Lohan,
Bruce Willis,
Christina Hendricks.
Pick Lindsay.
You know, Princess Merida is actually very cool.
I like you've heard all these other answers. You're like, oh,
we're still gonna go with the one that doesn't even, the fictional one.
The animated character with like the very round head.
The animated character beats out the real people.
Yeah, you know, she was arching from a horse, moving at like 50 miles an hour. Pretty amazing. She deserved it. She has a choice award. All right. Marcus.
Yes.
Would it have been cooler if Abraham Lincoln killed zombies and vampires in this film? Or if all of a sudden Ulysses S. Grant shows up with dual-wielding hatchets and helps to destroy the vampires?
I think the zombies would have made it a little bit better, but how do you do zombie attack in slow motion? I don't know. I think that's how you. that's the real question.
Carefully.
Okay. Let's see. I'll give this one to Maxwell.
Yes.
Do you prefer the Pixar storyline or the old school Disney storylines?
That's a tough question. I'd say if I was forced to choose, I would have to go with Pixar.
Okay. Interesting.
It's a very hard...
I was just going to say, we can get into this in the actual review, but I kind of feel like Brave was the old Disney storyline.
Yeah, there we go.
I would agree with that. Yeah. And then jumping off of that question, I'll ask Aaron.
Yeah.
Seeing as how Princess Merida is Pixar's first... Disney princess, who is your favorite Disney princess?
Let's see. See, this doesn't really count as a princess, but I always like the character of Meg from the Hercules movie. But she's not necessarily a princess. So,
that's obscure.
I like
that character. I don't know who that is.
Who?
Meg is very saucy. She's a very saucy lady.
She's the female character. She's the female love interest in Hercules. I like that character.
She's got an awesome song too.
She does. She's not necessarily a princess in that movie. So I would say Jasmine from Aladdin.
There we go. I know her.
I know who that is.
That's a person. Okay. I'm just gonna pose this one out to everybody. I read this list of badass president movies the other day, which I actually posted on the old Twitter machine. So I'm gonna read a couple of them because they're hilarious to me. And just imagine which one would you think is the movie you want to see. Anyway, we can just kind of just say that. So here we go. Here's the first one. We have William Howard Taft, Wrecking Ball. Let's see, Tom Hanks as Jimmy Carter in Get Carter.
I would watch that.
Yeah. Ulysses S. Grant in American Werewolf in Washington.
Yeah, I like that one.
Roosevelt in The New Dealer.
I love that. There it is. Stop there.
Okay. Well, there's a couple though. JFK, Cuban Missile Crisis.
That's a good one too.
Yeah. Hmm.
And let's see, Sasquatch Watch with Woodrow Wilson. And let's see, Hoover.
Oh.
What?
Whoa.
And of course, Will Smith as Obama in Barack Ness Monster.
That okay. would be spectacular.
I think that'd be a good one.
Maybe. I'll change my vote to that one.
Okay.
That's the one.
I think it's unanimous then.
Okay, cool. I'll put that in the show notes as well. We all want to see the Barack Ness Monster. And that's going to do it for an overbody this week, so thanks for that. let's get to movie trailer talk, where we discuss a couple of the newest movie trailers that have come out this week, and we have two new movie trailers. And the first one we can talk about is Pixar's next film, which is going to be a prequel to Monsters, Inc. It is entitled Monsters University, which follows the college days of Mike and Sully, John Goodman and Billy Crystal. And it's a year out, and it's a Pixar movie, so we're not going to really know about this plot much until we get there. But I imagine it probably involves Mike furiously studying for his finals while Sully just wants to bang chicks. So that's what I imagine.
That's what I got. That's what I got.
That's what will happen in that movie. Lots of socks on doors saying "Do not be." That's
Pixar's,
classy Pixar as always.
Pixar's first NC-17.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, straight there. Not R, not PG-13. Straight to NC-17. So with that said, very little known about the movie, and we only got a brief glimpse in the trailer presented. But with all that said, Mark, what did you think of the teaser that we got to see?
You know, I really liked Monsters, Inc., and a chance to revisit that story I think is a good idea. You know, Pixar's done sequels before with Toy Story, and I think all of them have been excellent. So generally, I usually feel like sequels are not as good as the original, but with Pixar, I definitely am optimistic. It is a year out, so I don't know if what we saw in the trailer is even going to be in the film or if it's just sort of a teaser. It probably is just a teaser, but what I saw in the trailer I thought was very funny and definitely got me interested in seeing it. So I definitely am down for Monsters University.
Cool. Maxwell.
For the most part, I agree with Mark. I'm usually a little more skeptical with prequels because I find that they usually don't work despite the best intentions of the creative team. But, you know, Pixar has as much goodwill as any studio I can think of, you know, producing these days. And I love the characters. The original film is so clever. So I think it'd be, you know, potentially very amusing and even moving, as many Pixar films are, to see Mike and Sully you know, having panty raids and snorting cocaine off their desks.
Those two things, yes.
I hope those are both in the film.
Featured prominently, yes. Yeah. Marcus.
In a montage.
Marcus, what are you?
I thought the trailer looked funny. I laughed out loud. I am kind of out of the loop here, but because I'm one of the only people that hasn't seen Monsters, Inc., it's like sacrilegious. Yeah, exactly. But, yeah. Man, tough crowd. But the trailer looked hilarious. I'm going to go watch Monsters, Inc. right now because of this trailer that I just saw. So from what I saw, it looks brilliant. I'll go see it.
Definitely the hesitation of, you know, prequels, like what Maxwell had said, kind of makes me feel a little bit uneasy. But at the same time, you know, Pixar is very strong in what they do, and they have a great team that helps them. And Monsters, Inc. was one of those films that I found to be, really, really funny when I saw it. And I saw it with my family, and everyone enjoyed it, and it was like that really tender moment. So, I'm hoping that Pixar, I hope that they know what they're doing, and I'm pretty sure that they do know what they're doing, so it would be a good thing to see.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I'm looking forward to this movie. I found it. I laughed out loud in the teaser, and I guess I'm happy that this is a prequel as opposed to a sequel, where you try to, I guess have the, I guess I can't spoil things for Marcus, but sir, try to bring back certain characters and not have it be as emotionally satisfying or feel too cloying in ways. So I like the idea of going back to a different time and like a neat kind of atmosphere. I mean, the idea of Pixar doing a college-based comedy, that seems inherently funny to me. And, you know, bringing back John Goodman and Billy Crystal and presumably the rest of the cast too, which could include Steve Buscemi, of course. And I hope, as I hope, like a complete opposite version of his character in Monsters, Inc., that'd be kind of humorous to me. Yeah, we'll see. And I like the idea, and it's a Pixar movie, which just makes me generally look forward to things in general. So, I mean,
I think a Pixar is always pretty good. So you really can't help but get excited about a new Pixar film.
I mean, I'm one of the four people that like Cars 2. So we'll.
I'm also one
of those. That one.
Yeah. No, I like Cars 2 also.
Yeah, see, see, there you go. All four of us are on this podcast. I can't believe they were able to assemble the four people in the world.
I know,
like,
right?
Cars 2.
Exactly.
within the world of Pixar, Cars 2 is probably lesser Pixar, but it's still, I enjoyed it.
Probably is putting it lightly. I would rank it number 12 out of 13. Is there 13? Yeah, 13. Yeah, that's right. I said it right. Yeah. So Monsters University comes out next June 21st next year. So, you know, we'll we'll certainly be there. So there you go. Our next film is the latest from Disney Animation Studios, and it's called Wreck-It Ralph. And apparently Disney was like, how do we win over Aaron Neuwirth immediately? And they're like, we should make an animated movie about video game characters and put John C. Reilly in it. And I'm like, all right, so good job, you guys, because this movie looks fantastic to me. It basically involves John C. Reilly as the character Wreck-It Ralph, who exists in a sort of classic arcade sort of game that's kind of a similar to Mario, to Donkey Kong, and old, like, very old, like, arcade games you'd find in, like, a 80s arcade. And he's this character named Wreck-It Ralph, who is essentially the bad guy character in a game akin to someone like Donkey Kong, who kind of exists to cause destruction only to have a character kind of solve the issue and destroy Wreck-It Ralph in a way. And so in this world, Wreck-It Ralph has become bored with being this character, and so he escapes he leaves his own video game to explore the possibility of going into other video games that he might be more suited for. And what follows is, it seems like he's going into different games that are kind of mirroring games that we see in current. So he goes to a Call of Duty type game, he goes into like a platformer type game, into like a kids type game and stuff. And it looks to be a lot of fun to me, but what does everyone else think? Let's start with Maxwell this time.
I think, frankly, it looks brilliant. I think it's such a clever premise. The fact that, you know, they're able to, you know, make deals and get the licensing rights for some of these great villain characters,
Zangief and M. Bison.
Exactly.
M. Bison, right? Exactly. One of the ghosts, yeah. From, like, ghosts from Pac-Man.
Exactly. and, of course, Bowser.
But,
that was the orange ghost. His name is Clyde.
But I think perhaps the most exciting thing about it is that Rich Moore is directing it,
yes.
Who, you know, used to work on The Simpsons back in the day. He directed Marge versus the Monorail, which is many people's favorite episode.
That's the golden era.
Written by Conan O'Brien.
Yes, it was. Worked on Futurama for a long time, so we can definitely do subversive animation, and that's what I expect from it. I'm sure it'll also have a pretty strong emotional core, being that it's Disney. But yeah, I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Mark?
I got very excited when I saw the trailer. I like the little roundtable discussion that they are having sort of at the psychiatrist's office. And, you know, you see the characters from Pac-Man and Sonic the Hedgehog and Super Mario Brothers and whatnot, and I kind of got a little bit of a Who Framed Roger Rabbit vibe, you know, where you're getting characters from other entities all combined in the same movie, and I really like that idea, and I think it's really going to speak to, like, people who love classic video games, but then at the same time, I think it's going to also appeal to just people who are into the modern video games as well. So, I mean, I think this, if the movie is good, it's going to have the potential to be like an across-the-board hit with like all age groups. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing it.
I should also mention that, including beyond John C. Reilly, you also have Jane Lynch, Jack McBrayer, Sarah Silverman.
And Jane Lynch looks like Jane Lynch.
Yeah, she does.
Like,
yeah.
She looks exactly. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's Jane Lynch.
Sarah Silverman, Dennis Haysbert, President Palmer himself in the movie.
Mm.
So, you know, solid voice cast going on.
And the trailer, they had that little riff on Q-Bert, and he starts talking, and they're like, I don't know what he's saying. You know, it's like these little jokes that are going to probably mean more to older people, but then they're going to have, like, the more recent video games and stuff as well. I think it's a very smart idea.
Marcus?
Yeah, I have to really agree with what everybody's been saying. I mean, the only thing about it, I mean, it looks like the stereotypical, you know, misfit, wonders about what's out in the outside world, only to figure out that his friends have been around him the whole time, kind of thing. So I don't know how the storyline itself is going to play out, but I mean, I'm going to see it for the video games alone. So
cool. Abe?
I'm just curious and very excited to see how many video game references they pack into this film. See it, and that's probably going to be like the biggest driving thing. But at the same time, you know, I like John C. Reilly a lot. I think he's really talented. So, you know, I'm excited to see where they go with that. And I was, as sophomoric as it seems, I was laughing a lot when Sarah Silverman was just kind of mocking and mimicking him in the trailer. So, you know, if there's funny humor like that, then I'm pretty sure that it'll be a good film.
Yeah, this is like, the first, like, Disney 3D, like what, 3D animated film that I'm, like, excited to see. In terms of, like, what did they've had, like, Home on the Range, Meet the Robinsons, Chicken Little, and I think Bolt. Bolt I actually liked quite a bit, but it wasn't, like...
Yeah, actually, the last, they did Bolt, and they did Tangled, and both
of those... Yeah, Tangled, I forgot about Tangled. Yeah,
Both of those were pretty decent.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
They weren't bad.
But I wouldn't say that I was, like, really, like, excited to go and see them.
Before you saw it,
before
right,
I saw
right.
them, yeah.
I get it, yeah.
So, like,
I agree.
Wreck-It Ralph has already hooked me in, so I'm like... And it's because it really caters to my interests, obviously. Well,
and you know what? That's the brilliant thing about Wreck-It Ralph, is I think if it's good, the average person who doesn't even care about video games is going to enjoy it. But it's also going to speak to, like, the video game geek that can kind of, like, get into all the little in references and know those characters. And it has the potential to be, like, one of these across-the-board smashes that, like, everyone can kind of enjoy on a different level.
And we'll find out if everybody enjoys it on November 2nd, 2012, when it comes out this coming fall. All right, so that's some trailer talk, and I guess we can move on now to our film review, our first film review for Brave.
I want my freedom! But are you willing to pay the price your freedom will cost?
Careful what you wish for, my mother would say.
What's the worst that could happen? Yeah!
No more fighting!
Show a little decorum!
Feast your eyes!
If you had the chance to change your fate, would you?
So that should have been some of the trailer for Brave, and this is, of course, the newest Pixar film, which revolves around Princess Merida, who hails from the Scottish kingdom of Dumbach, and her mother, the Queen, voiced by Emma Thompson, Princess Merida is voiced by Kelly MacDonald, by the way, the Queen wants her to act as a queen would, and wants her to choose one of the suitors from another kingdom to be her husband. And Merida doesn't like this. She'd rather choose her own way of life, whether it be pursuing her skill of archery or doing whatever she chooses that she'd like to. After an ensuing argument that's based on the actions that Merida takes, she finds herself away from the kingdom and in a position where she can change her fate. What ensues is a fantastical sort of adventure with a mother-daughter relationship at its core. Lots to discuss. Okay, let's start with Mark. What did you think of Brave?
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you know, a lot has been made about the fact that Brave is the first Pixar film to spotlight a female lead. And it is different than a lot of the Pixar films that they've done before in that respect. But overall, I felt like it was very safe and kind of, I mean, thematically bland in the world of Pixar. It's very much a throwback to sort of every Disney princess that they've done over the past 20 years. And it's kind of this sort of age-old battle of tradition versus contemporary values. And I think that's definitely a valid notion to explore. But the problem is that I just felt like Pixar really didn't do anything fresh with it. There definitely are some amusing moments. I think that the animation is as gorgeous as it's ever been in any Pixar film, and I really enjoy the lords that are presenting their sons to win the hand of Princess Merida's in marriage, and their sons and the lords. I thought they were wonderful, and I liked Julie Walters, who does the voice of the witch, who kind of provides sort of the catalyst for the story's sort of development. So I enjoyed all those things, but ultimately I did kind of feel like it was sort of a disappointing reflection on the sort of, like I said before, traditional versus contemporary values. And it's passable. I mean, I was entertained while I was watching it, but overall I felt like it was sort of a superficial treatment of kind of a well-worn idea that Disney has done like countless times before.
Maxwell.
Okay, I mean, it's definitely a little more simple and straightforward than some of the complex narratives Pixar has given us in the past, but what I really liked about it, and this perhaps speaks to how much of a Disney fan I am, is that You know, in all of their films, Pixar has taken sort of genres that we've seen countless times and put their own spin on it. And I thought it was a really kind of cool and clever idea to take the classic Disney fairy tale, a company, of course, that they are owned by and work in tandem with, and do their take on it. Mark was talking a little bit about, you know, the clash between traditions and new ideals, and that's definitely in there. But to me, what the film is really about is the mother-daughter relationship. And I think in terms of that, it hits a real emotional high. I was very affected by the two characters, by Merida and her mom, the queen. And I think both Kelly MacDonald and Emma Thompson give great, rich vocal performances that really attached me to these characters and, you know, made me very involved in their journey. And I think it also is an interesting counterpoint to Finding Nemo, because that's a father-son story. This is a mother-daughter story, and there's definitely some back and forth between the two and the way the stories evolve. So I definitely liked it a lot. Not Pixar's best, but, you know, they have such high standards that I still think it's a very, very strong animated film.
Marcus.
Yeah, I really liked it. This second half kind of drooped off, but I was laughing throughout the first hour of it. It looks spectacular. I think after Cars 2, it's a nice comeback for Pixar. I think everybody was really good in it. Emma Thompson, Billy Connolly, everybody was really, really good in it. It does explore that mother-daughter relationship, like Maxwell was talking about, really, really well. I really liked it. Second half aside.
Cool.
Abe. Even though the storyline was really simple.
Abe.
It's definitely a story that you kind of don't see coming, but at the same time, it's a traditional story about overcoming, you know, fears and obstacles and choosing your own path in life. And ultimately, you know, the bonds that make a family. And I don't think that it's a knock on the film that it's kind of more traditional, because I don't think that it necessarily has to be something that was kind of fresh and awe-inspiring and a very different take. And I think a couple people have touched on this before, which is just to say that, you know, that mother-daughter relationship thing is kind of its own little new spin, I guess. Because you don't really see those films or those types of, I guess, animated children's stories too often. It's a lot of father-son or father-daughter interaction. So this was kind of something new, and it was nice. It was, you know, I guess, as not traditional of a narrative as some of these Finding Nemo or even, I don't know, The Jungle Book. So it's... Baloo and Mowgli, but you know, I think that that's kind of its gem there. But it definitely, you know, technically speaking, it looked great. It was the wisps were looking really awesome, yeah, I mean, you know, I definitely like the humor in it from the four clans.
Yeah, Abe. I think I kind of agree with what you're. I mean, we all seem to like the movie, but I think I agree with a lot of your thoughts and and yeah, on a technical level, this movie looks amazing, especially Merida's hair. It's like a really, it does. Yes. It really, it like
there's like corkscrews in it, like randomly.
What's interesting to me about this movie and Pixar in general is the way they advertise their movies. Now, we've purposely not detailed kind of what goes on in the rest of the film in the second act and on, but there is a twist that occurs. And leading up to Brave, you don't know what really the plot is. You get an idea of what the premise is. You understand that Merida's a princess that wants to kind of be her own woman, which is admirable, and that, you know, it's a neat way to go about things, but you don't really know what's going to happen from there. And that's something I find with Pixar films in general, where you get an idea of what the premise is, but you don't really know where it's going when you go to see that film. You kind of sit down, you're like, oh, okay, this is where the plot's going. That's interesting. Something like WALL-E, for example, you don't really know the story of that movie. The other films, they don't really spell out the plot for you in the trailer. So that's something I like about Pixar in general. So in going to Brave, I like the movie overall. I'm a fan of it. I think as we've mentioned, the mother-daughter element, I think that's a neat relationship to see play out. And I also agree that the story is more traditional in a Disney sort of sense. So now knowing what the movie is without having that added kind of suspense of where the movie's going to be going, I guess. So it comes down to me of would I want to like watch this movie again, or like would it have the same effect on me knowing that there's not a certain surprising element that's going to occur. And I'd say yes. I'd say I probably would sit down and watch the movie again, because I really liked how it played out. I liked the voice cast. I like, and it's kind of a more limited cast than opposed to other Pixar movies, but I liked Kelly MacDonald as Merida, and I liked Emma Thompson's work, and I liked Billy Connolly a lot too as King Fergus. And I think it's a very likable movie. I wouldn't say it's, you know, the pantheon level of Pixar, but that just means that it's in the really solid level of Pixar, which is not a bad place to be at all. I mean, it may not be a 10, but you know, 7, 8, 9, not a bad place for any movie. Certainly better than many movies that come out throughout the year, let alone any other animated movies from other studios that don't seem to have as careful a grasp on how to kind of make these films work out. But yeah, I would agree with Mark that it plays it safe. That's a good way to phrase it. It plays it safer in terms of the scope of the story and just kind of what kind of ground it's covering, which is to say it's not breaking any necessarily ambitious ground, but it does a good job with the story it's telling, I think. And yeah, for that I really enjoyed the film overall.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta say one thing. What really made it for me, and this may sound really silly, were those three little boys.
That's fine, yeah.
Three little boys were almost as endearing as the fat kid from Up. Whenever there was a kind of a lull or something, they would throw those three little boys in, and it would get me back into the movie. So I have to say that's probably my favorite part, and I don't want to downplay it, but...
It's interesting that you mentioned about their like lull in the movie, and I felt like a large portion of the film was based on slapstick when they're trying to undo this spell. And yeah, I was like, it went on for a long time. I was like, oh my gosh, nothing is happening to advance the story. They're just doing one slapstick. That What's that?
You didn't find that funny? The slapstick, the
I mean, it was amusing, but I mean, it didn't really, like, advance the story, or I didn't really feel like it.
But there's not much, I don't think there's much of a story here. I mean, if you want to analyze the story alone, there's not much of a story here. It's very, very simple. It's something that gets in and out pretty quickly. So I think they needed to fill it with something, and they filled it with something that I really, really love.
Right, right. But so when you like compare it to some of the stories like what I saw in Toy Story 3 or Finding Nemo, the stories are so much more rich and diverse that this kind of paled in comparison.
It makes me kind of curious about what happened. Now, I should mention that this film was kind of co-directed, but there's a little bit of a controversy behind that. It was co-directed by Brenda Chapman and Mark Andrews. But having said that, Brenda Chapman was actually... she was replaced by Mark Andrews during the process of this movie. So it makes me wonder, because that would have also been
a bit of a stormy production.
It was originally titled The Bear and the Bow. And I mean, the sources say it's creative differences that kind of led to a different person helming the project. So it makes me curious as to what possibly Brenda Chapman's version of this, that the story was, whether it was any different, or if there's some other story elements that were lost in the process, or
from what I've heard, it was much more serious under her hand, and Mark came in and brought a lot more of the humorous elements that we see in the film,
which kind of reflects remember the first teaser for this film, where it's very it's much more evocative of terms in, like, you have just Merida riding and a bear attacks her, and that's like,
honestly, that's what I was dreading the most. I was dreading that it was going to be straightforward, like it was going to have a little 8-year-old snoozing in the theater. But I think, however it was rewritten or however it was redirected or the jokes that were thrown in, I think they all worked to elevate this movie or maybe mask the movie as something better than it actually is.
Maybe it didn't have the three boys in it.
Yeah, it's still pretty dark, though. I mean, compare it to other Pixar, it's still one of the darkest films that I think Pixar has ever done.
Is it?
I don't know about that.
What would be darker than this?
I'd say Wall-E.
Well, I think if you think of Wall-E in a certain perspective, it's very dark. I think if you think of certain scenes in Toy Story 3, let me finish this. If you think of Toy Story 3 in certain ways, it's pretty dark. If you think of the opening of Finding Nemo or Up, for that matter, there's a lot of dark elements.
But all of those characters are very uplifting and kind of charming. The character of Merida is actually quite – I mean, she's dark. I mean, I don't want to go into like – what she does, but she has some she's a very selfish personality, much more so than
yes, I do.
Yeah.
I think what makes it kind of intense though is that they're human characters. You know, in something like Toy Story or Wall,
or Cars 2, which features a lot of death if you really think about that movie.
Don't bring up Cars 2 again.
And so the violence and action elements in this could hit harder. I actually saw the film with my 8-year-old nephew, and I also saw Toy Story 3 with him, and he was very scared and brave, but had no problems with Toy Story 3. He liked the film a lot, but in certain scenes where there were attacks, so to speak, he got very scared during it.
Actually, Maxwell, that's a brilliant point, because I think the fact that this is all based on people, and
which is somewhat rare for a Pixar film. You
know? It is. So that makes it a little bit more realistic, I guess.
Yeah,
I'd have to agree with that. I mean, the whole theme of it is dark, just like a lot of the other Pixar movies. But the fact that it was like realistic situations, you know,
to an extent.
The fact that it was more it wasn't a fish or it wasn't a you know, robot or something like that.
Right, even The Incredibles, they're superheroes, so it's still it's a level of sort of
It's a heightened reality, yeah.
Right.
Here's a question, getting back to our point about kind of the shift change in who's helming the project. Did anyone find I'll phrase this lightly, the magic element confusing in terms of...
In what respect?
Well, I mean, you know, Merida has to do something in order to solve a problem. I get that aspect, but...
Yeah.
Did anyone find anything confusing about how she needed to do that?
A little bit.
Because I feel like there was like a step that I missed or something where I was just like, wait, what did she need to do? Like she needed to...
Well, I wasn't sure. At one point, I wasn't sure if it was something sort of within herself or was an actual physical thing.
Yes, that's kind that's kind of what I'm getting at. And it feels like there's one scene that could be added that could help better clarify that for me. And
was she supposed to fix herself, or was she supposed to fix an object?
Yes, exactly. And that kind of like just kind of threw me.
I know exactly.
It kind of threw me, because it's like, I feel like I shouldn't be confused in a Pixar animated film. But yet I am.
it's just that deep.
Yeah.
Okay. It's deep, man. It's deep.
I see it again, which I might do, actually. I saw this a few weeks ago now, actually. Okay, now here's another thing I want to bring up that I really liked about the film, because we've been talking about how it feels more more classical Disney in a sense of how the story plays out. But think about the villain character. Basically, you can think about what would be considered the villain character, and there really isn't a villain. I would say there's a character that's dangerous, and there's also another character that in a traditional, like a really traditional Disney movie, you would see to be the villain. But you don't have either of those things here. There's not a villain necessarily in this movie.
This is more like a woman versus society kind of movie than it is a traditional villain versus hero.
It's like us versus them. Yeah. The
personal journey. There doesn't have to be an outright villain. I think that works to its favor, actually.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, and I think that. And I think Pixar struggled in the past with having villains and how to dispose of them in certain senses. Like, you have something like Up, where as much as I like Up a lot, I mean, I feel like, to me, Up, like, it's not a favorite Pixar movie of mine. I really love Up a lot, especially, I mean, obviously the first, like, 10 minutes of that movie, everyone loves that. But, like, when you get into, the main stretch of the plot and how that plot resolves itself, it's where the movie, it becomes not a fantastic Pixar movie, but just like a really, really good one. And I like the way they approach that aspect in this story, where you don't have a traditional, like a big bad that you have to take care of in this film. You have kind of a different way to go about how the story's evolving. And I found that interesting. And the fact that there's not a love interest in this movie either.
Well, that's
there are three.
Are they? They're not love interests.
That's actually kind of follows into the way that the year 2012 has been. I mean, Snow White and the Huntsman, Mirror Mirror. There's like no love in any of these like princess movies. It's they've taken it out. So that's kind of the trend, I think.
Yeah, the independent woman.
We can talk about that.
Yeah,
okay. We can talk about that a little bit too. The independent woman aspect. Something also I liked about this movie is the fact that I think more people were playing up that aspect than the movie actually itself does. You get the idea that yeah, she wants to be a woman for her, so she wants to make her own choice and what have you. But I don't think the movie, I don't think the movie's not speaking in your face all the time. Yeah, it's not speaking as a this is a great movie for feminists. It's not playing up that aspect of it. It's just kind of this is what the movie is. Like it's not. It's not highlighting that fact. It's not.
I mean,
it's not speechy at all.
I think there's a lot of scenes though where the mother is telling her, "We want you to embroider. We want you to be a lady," and she keeps rejecting it. I mean, it's definitely. I think it's pretty in there.
I think it's there, but I don't think it's. I don't think the movie makes as big a deal out of it as people surrounding the movie have.
Right.
Yeah. Those scenes, though, didn't even necessarily strike me as, you know, a feminist comment.
And that could easily have been, like, a prince acts this way, too. Like, it could have reversed that.
But, you know, rather just very indicative of how a teenager and a parent figure often clash over things. The parent, you know, always wants their kid to be something that they're not, and the kid is struggling for their independence, regardless of gender or whether they're a princess or just, you know, some dude in the suburbs. That's a classic... you know, teenager parent struggle.
There also isn't a kind of a girls can do anything boys can aspect, I think. I don't think it suggests that either. I don't think it plays up this big feminist deal that
I think it certainly shows that she's talented.
I think it shows that she has
no,
a skill at art.
There's more than that.
The scene with the three suitors and the way that they all perform and then the way she shows them up, that is clearly the most I mean, it's blaring that she is not only is she as good as the boys, she's better than the boys.
Firstborn descendant of Clan Dunbrog, and I'll be shooting for my own hand. What are you doing? Merida! Curse this dress! Merida, stop this! Don't you dare loose another arrow! Merida, I forbid it!
But she picked an activity that she has tons of practice
at. Skill.
If she had picked something involving... you know, something she hadn't practiced at, then I don't necessarily think...
Right, well, we will never know that, because
it's
we
just
don't...
True, but...
It's traditional. This is what boys do, this is what girls do, and she can do what boys do, and I think that's what I got out of... Actually, the first half of the movie was all about how I can do whatever the boys can do, and better. That kind of says a lot about the feminist... portion of this movie. It's not like an undertone or anything like that. It's out there.
I don't think it says she can do anything boys can do better. She says she can do archery better than these three particular guys.
Well, we don't see anything else.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't present that.
Right. So we have to just go on what the movie presents. She's pretty good at riding a horse. She's good at climbing mountains. I mean, she's a pretty macho girl.
I'd assume getting down for mountains as well. We didn't see that.
There was a few first scenes in there when she was dreading having to take these princess classes and these classes, and then she was excited to get her one day off where she
anything traditionally feminine. She was rolling her eyes, had to wear a corset, she was upset. When she had to embroider, she was upset. She didn't want to do anything feminine, but anything to do with archery, which were, you know, might be seen as traditionally masculine activities, that's what she gravitated towards.
She liked letting her hair flow in the wind.
Yes, and she did that very well.
Yes.
But there was one of her suitors had pretty long hair too.
He didn't enjoy letting it flow in the wind as much though. So I guess girls are better at that.
He's also got anger issues.
He had anger issues, yeah, he did. I like the three suitor characters.
Oh, those I love fun. Them. Those I thought they fun. Were really funny.
Yeah. The...
My favorite is the guy that you couldn't even understand what he was saying.
I call him Fat Brad Pitt because he's like talking. He's talking. he's talking in pikey. You can't understand what he's saying.
Almost like a Swedish chef.
Yeah.
Well, on the website it says that he's speaking a dialect that's very uncommon. So
we can get back to the production of this film, the technical aspects of it. Pixar in the past has kind of raised their bar in animation, and I think it's tougher to do that now just because we've gotten to a certain level where like how much better can you make these movies kind of look? But I think it does bring a lot of It brings a lot to, like, as I've said, Merida's hair looks pretty fantastic in this movie. But, I mean, also, it's delving into a world of a period setting, which we haven't seen before. And it looked really good. That's basically what it boils down to. But I think
the expressions, too. Like, there's one part where she starts to cry, and it's almost like it's better than even a human expression. I mean, she did it. The animators did a fantastic job with that.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a beautiful film, but one other thing that I really liked about it, and kind of about the production, is I think it does a really good job of creating this distinctly Scottish flavor. You know, you have the score by Patrick Doyle.
It's quite good. Accents. I like that score a lot.
Yes.
You have the lush greenery, and it definitely has a very distinct sense of place and time that I think helps sell the story, and I thought it was very strong in that regard.
Jumping back to even before the movie started, we had, I just want to talk about this a little bit because when do we ever get a chance to, we had the animated short La Luna that preceded the film, which was, I'm sorry, the Academy Award nominated La Luna, which preceded the film,
which it did not win.
No, it did not win. I was gonna say Mr. Megorium, Mr. whatever's book emporium thing that
you've seen all the you saw,
I saw
the shorts.
I saw all the shorts, yes.
And I
liked another. I didn't even like that one. Well, I liked all of them, but that's not the one I would have chosen. I chose the completely weird one that involved a chicken going through time.
That had no chance of winning.
Correct. No chance, but opposed to the one that won, which I actually thought was kind of Oscar bait, which is hilarious to me.
It totally is.
Yeah, but
reading is good.
Yes.
Yeah.
But anyway, La Luna is the short that precedes the Pixar film, and did we like Luna? I'd like to think that we probably like La Luna, but did you guys like La Luna? I liked it quite a bit.
Very sweet.
I think it's beautiful.
It also kind of, it counteracts the mother-daughter relationship by having basically a father-son relationship going on in that little 7-minute.
And grandfather.
And yeah,
three
exactly.
Generations of man.
Yes.
Yes.
It's just like that Michael Douglas movie.
I like how they are both, the two older men are pushing the brooms that look like their own mustaches.
Yes.
That was clever.
Yeah.
It was what it was. It was. Whatever. I was like, after a while, I was like, get to the.
Oh, I mean, it's a short.
Still.
Clearly, Marcus.
I know. It was a short, and I was tuned out in a minute.
Marcus is clearly just upset that he did not get the janitor job of sweeping up the moon. That
exactly. I got past
that. Thanks for ruining it, Aaron. Also, the score in that short was really well done by Michael
Giacchino.
Yeah, and I just remember that it was just, it was very, there's a lot of accordion in it, and it was just really nice, and it fit very much with the mood of the film.
Yeah.
All right, so getting back to Brave, just to wrap up, because we do have a whole other movie to review, let's provide our rating. Each week on Out Now, we try to rate films based on when you should go and see them. And so we have a scale that goes from IMAX to theater, Dollar Theater, Netflix, HBO, TV, or just kind of forget about it. Before I ask each of you what that rating is, did we all see it in 3D? I actually only saw this movie in 2D.
Saw it in 2D.
I've seen it both ways.
I saw it in 3D.
You saw it twice? Wow. Nice job.
Mark,
I saw an early screening a couple of weeks ago, and then I went with my nephew yesterday.
Okay.
Mark, how'd you see it?
I saw it in 2D.
Okay. Now, I'm curious because the film ends with two dark characters fighting in a dark setting. So I was wondering, how does that work in 3D?
Usually, animated films are the ones that I don't mind so much in 3D. But because a lot of the film takes place at night and that scene you alluded to is very dark, it's very, very hard to see. Mm-hmm.
It's I also think that the 3D is, you don't really actually need it. I don't really
think it was. 3D is always
there was nothing that was like,
but it's super dark. It's hard to see.
Right.
They should have made a conscious effort, like Avatar did, to brighten up the images for the 3D release, so then the lenses would have countered it to the proper brightness level, but they didn't do that.
Okay, so getting back to our rating, on our scale that we presented, Mark, how would you rate Brave?
I mean, I think you should see it in a theater, because I think the beauty of the animation demands that, but I would have to say dollar theater.
Okay. Maxwell?
I would definitely say go see it in the theater.
Marcus?
Definitely in the theater, not in 3D.
Abe?
Yeah, theater.
And I am at theater, too. All right, so that is our review for Brave. Our other segment that we do for each movie, we have movie callback.
Callback.
And this is where we kind of make reference to a few films that we maybe thought of during or after having seen the feature that we've reviewed. Let's start again with Mark. Mark, would any movies come to mind while you were watching?
Well, I mean, these are so obvious, but I just thought of other Disney princesses, particularly Princess Jasmine and Belle from Beauty and the Beast. In fact, there's several parallels in this film to Beauty and the Beast. And so those two I thought were the most obvious.
Maxwell.
Maybe it's just because of the hair color, but I was Little Mermaid all the way. The red hair, similarities between Ariel and Merida. But yeah, I mean, this film is going to call back to anything. It's Disney princesses. It's, you know, no doubt.
Marcus.
I would have to say almost like a Mulan kind of thing going on here.
Oh yeah,
that's what.
Definitely, yeah.
That's a good call.
Oh, and if I could just jump back in quick, I'd say
you can't, Abe. No, I'm just kidding.
Definitely some similarities to How to Train Your Dragon.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. actually. Oh yeah, that's definitely. Actually one
in terms of the character design and the visuals and the time period,
and even just kind of the way the I guess offspring son character in that movie reflects kind of he wants to make his own choices as opposed to what his father wants to have for him, kind of thing. How to Train Your Dragon was on mine, as well as Finding Nemo, because of kind of the, in one story you have a father-son relationship, the other this one you have a mother-daughter relationship, so just kind of the way they counteract each other. And this was surprising to me, because I thought of this film, and then I read friend of the show Scott Mendelson's review, and we both referenced the same movie, which was Whip It, the Drew Barrymore film, and which stars Ellen Page as kind of a roller and which is a good movie. I think that movie was underseen, I'd say, when it came out. And
it is a good movie,
and there's a mother-daughter relationship in that movie, which I think is very strong and very familiar to Brave, in many ways better. And I was just very surprised that I read that in Scott Mendelson's review. He's like, I was thinking of Whip It also. Abe, any movies?
Absolutely. Beauty and the Beast, but more so on the Beast side, and also Brother Bear.
Okay. all right. So that's our discussion for Brave, which is, you know, we all liked. So let's Jesus. Okay, we got a whole other movie to review. This should be fun. Here we go. Mark, you did not see the next movie, but feel free to, you know, hang out and ask us any questions you might have.
Sure, I might be able to
further along the conversation of the next movie we're talking about, which is Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
47 years ago.
There is darkness everywhere, Mr. Lincoln.
My fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
Vampires have been in the New World for centuries.
We are engaged in a great civil war. These brave men shall not have died in vain.
It's time vampires got a nation of our own.
All right, so that should have been some of the trailer for Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, the new genre mashup film based off the book by Seth Graham Smith, which involves Abraham Lincoln's life as a vampire hunter. He also co-wrote the screenplay, by the way, or not co-wrote, he adapted the screenplay of his own book for this film. And it is, in fact, a biopic of sorts, t- to the loosest extents, which merges the life of Abraham Lincoln with his fictional double life as a hunter of vampires. After, you know, it starts out with Abe at a young age. After losing his mother to a member of the undead, he vows revenge and eventually grows up and teams up to become... He teams up with Henry Sturgis, played by Dominic Cooper, who trains him to hunt bloodsuckers using a axe coated with silver. And what follows is kind of a series of events that tie up the events of Lincoln's life to his, as a eventual politician, to his life as a vampire slayer. And, of course, spinning axe jujitsu hijinks ensue. So, let's start with Abe on this one. Abe, what did you think of Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter?
It is the most historically accurate film I've ever seen in my life. I was blown away. But it's a ridiculously ludicrous film. But I found it to be ridiculously, ludicrously entertaining as well. It's actually just also very busy and very extensive. It kind of goes through a lot of Abraham Lincoln's life, apparently all of it. It's also just really poorly written, but at the same time, the action sequences are great. I actually liked a lot of the terrible one-liners. The vampires are, they're interesting, but at the same time, they're also just really dumb and dull. And a lot of the side characters are people that you can root for. So it's a terrible film, but I had a fun time watching it and discussing it afterwards with the people that I watched it with.
All right. Maxwell.
Okay. I'll start off by saying that I actually have read the book a couple years ago and quite enjoyed it. I thought it was very clever. And I think this movie is anything but clever. I actually thought it was pretty awful. I will say that Benjamin Walker, I think, is very charismatic and does a good job of sort of evolving with Abe Lincoln from the young man to the president that we all know. I think it's an impressive performance, and I feel like he's going to be getting a lot of work to come. But beyond that, I think it's a really ugly, loud movie that emphasizes slow motion and, you know, these action techniques that, you know, should have died, you know, years ago in filmmaking. I think it jumps around in time a lot. It gets very confusing. Like in one scene, you know, he's a young guy, and then all of a sudden, oh, he wants to be in politics. He's the president.
Well, he stood on a soapbox, which indicates obviously that he's going to become president one day.
Yeah. And he's very serious.
I'm pretty sure it said soapbox on it, too.
What confused me about that is that we jump in time, and he looks like the Abe Lincoln we all know. He looks older. He has the beard. But then Anthony Mackie still looks the same damn age. So I'm like, wait, is he a secret vampire? What's going on?
So does Mary Todd.
Gray hair.
So does Mary Todd.
Well, they gave her a little gray in her hair, but they're I just found it, really sloppy and inconsistent. And you know, Timur Bekmambetov likes his slow motion way too much. Gave me a headache.
Oh, man.
Marcus.
Oh, where do I start? It was a train wreck. The slow motion reminded me of some kid in middle school that just loves star wipes, so he had to just do star wipes. This was just every little chance there was slow motion. I think if they took out all the slow motion, this would have been 10 minutes in and out. The parts where they weren't killing vampires were boring and just sit through. The parts where they were killing vampires were just kind of whatever. They got kind of boring too after a while. It wasn't good. It wasn't good. Maybe the biggest flaw in this movie is it took itself way too seriously.
Yes.
There was a few little cornball jokes in it, but they didn't work. You have a movie with the potential. You have the whole reason for the Emancipation Proclamation is because of these racist vampires who want to keep the South alive, right? And you don't have any jokes in there for that. You can't even it was so poorly written. It was poorly directed. It was just a mess. It was bad. I really don't have any much more to say about that.
Now I've read the book too, and I really enjoyed the book and was upset that this movie, and I mean, going into this movie, like I've seen the trailers before, like I already knew that it wasn't going to resemble the book very much in terms of how stylized it was and knowing it's Timur Bekmambetov's style opposed to kind of the book, which is written kind of, it's written like as a kind of secret diary, which is in the film to an extent, but it's written as kind of a journal. That's kind of the writing style. It's written as someone finding this journal and reading those journal entries. And so it kind of, it feels like a well-researched book because it literally ties in various events of Abraham Lincoln's life to this, you know, fictional world of him being a vampire hunter. And I thought that was pretty creative and fun. This movie is very much a generic kind of just action-y movie that happens to have the coding of being a period film with vampires in it. And that's upsetting because it essentially, it makes, what's annoying is that this movie is exactly what people unfamiliar with the book would kind of expect to be. It's not anything better. It's not creative beyond like some action bits here and there. It's not particularly fun. It is too serious. And it gives movies with this kind of premise a bad name to it in a way. Which is weird to say, but like, you see a movie like this and you think it's going to be a movie like this, which is, it's not something better. It's not something like, what's a good example of this? I thought Cowboys and Aliens isn't a good example, so that doesn't count. But even like
Jesus Christ Vampire Slayer.
Jesus Christ Vampire Slayer. Yeah, Snakes on a Plane, almost just because that movie's actually entertaining for what it is. Like exactly. it feels like, It's a goofy idea for a story, and that's exactly what it turns out to be, which is unfortunate because there is a book version of this that is it's clever. It's beyond what how goofy its title may sound. So it's sad that that happened to turn out that way. And because in the movie, it's not good. Like I had a little, I think I had more fun than Maxwell and Marcus have. I don't think I enjoyed it in the way that Abe did quite. I didn't have.
We had some drinks before.
There you go.
There we go.
And it was a lot of things. A lot of the reasons amount to just like world building stuff. Like you get Abraham Lincoln and he becomes a vampire hunter, but there's no he's not gifted in any way. He's just told by Dominic Cooper that if you're truly honest, Abe, you can do this. And like, okay, that means I can chop this tree down now.
I'd like you to chop this tree down with a single swing.
That tree? Gotta be more than a foot across, that's impossible.
But it isn't a tree. It's what you hate most in the world. So tell me, Mr. Lincoln, what do you hate?
I hate that my mother was taken away.
It's inadequate.
I hate that we were afraid.
And?
That my mother, my father, everyone that we knew, lived in fear.
Pathetic.
I hate that I was too small.
Too weak.
Yes.
And that you failed.
Yes!
To protect her.
Yes!
And that you let her die. Power, Lincoln. Real power. Comes not from hate, but from truth.
It makes no sense. And I'm not saying a movie called Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter needs to make sense, but it needs to have some kind of rules that you can base things off of. Any movie needs to have some kind of way to establish its world. And the only way it does that is by providing stylized action sequences with having little context as to why these are stylized action sequences. Like, why does he need to do axe foo twirling axe stuff around when because
it's training for a later scene involving horses
because he's not okay.
Okay, that kick.
Maxwell,
I ask a question? Oh, sorry.
Go.
Well, I was just gonna ask Maxwell, you had mentioned in your review of this film that what was the name of the guy that was the star?
Benjamin Walker.
You said his performance was good. Do you think that Daniel Day-Lewis should be worried for his biography later on this year?
Obviously, that's a ridiculous question.
I asked it in all seriousness.
No, I mean, even though
Benjamin Walker does
a good job, he's playing a very different, version of the character. It's a more heightened version that has some tropes of the classic action hero. It's more of like a movie star performance, whereas obviously Daniel Day-Lewis we expect to be more internal and, realistic. But I will say I have seen Benjamin Walker on the stage in New York. He's a Broadway veteran and he's a very talented guy. He can sing. He does stand-up comedy. So I definitely think he's going to be a big star. And he's married to Meryl Streep's daughter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He did have a nice screen presence. I'll give him that.
I did like his...
Okay. He was okay. They didn't give him much to do.
No, they didn't give him
much
to do.
Except they didn't give him much to do.
No, but that said, I mean, it could have been a lot worse.
I don't know about that.
His presence didn't bother me, and I didn't think that what he was required to do in this movie, I think he did what he needed to do, except that he did have a grim face on the whole time because the movie took itself too seriously. But let me also say that this movie did have better makeup than J. Edgar.
Yes. I'm not sure a lot of other young actors could have convincingly played old Lincoln, because I felt when he was playing President Lincoln, I felt he was much older.
Yeah, that's kind of where I...
pretty impressive.
The J. Edgar comment, which is half joking but half serious, he does work as older Lincoln. I think it's not to the extent that somebody like Daniel Day-Lewis will in the upcoming Spielberg version of Lincoln, but in terms of the kind of movie that this is, it didn't bother me that this was obviously a young guy playing an old Lincoln. I felt he worked in that role, in that position.
I was upset to hear that Spielberg removed all the vampires from his version. Wildly inaccurate to fact.
I heard that Nicolas Cage was in contention for this role, and he lost out to Benjamin Walker. I'm wondering what you guys think about if he had played the part.
Obviously, that would have made this the best movie of the year. Okay, moving on, Mark, is what we're going to say.
I think it would have been more entertaining. For everybody who saw or who read the book, I mean, there's a weird... there's a weird thing in this movie where it almost alludes to the fact that the only reason Lincoln even wanted to do any kind of Emancipation Proclamation wasn't even because he liked black people. It was because he wanted to avenge his mother. Does it come through in this movie? Like, oh, yes, we see him interact with the black person at the very beginning. And then, you know, he interacts with a few black people. He shakes one's hand and he has a black best friend. And then – but it's Vampire Hunter. Like, I have another ulterior motive, which is Vampire Hunter, you know, and getting rid of all these slave owners.
Yeah, no, the problem with this movie is that – well, I mean, among the problems with this movie is that it does – it streamlines a lot of what the – it feels like a completely different thing, which is odd considering that it's the same author for both the screenplay and the book. It feels like this is a movie that was written to be a studio action blockbuster movie.
Okay.
The book is very different. It has a lot more. It does a lot of not necessarily deep exploration of the Lincoln character, but it does tie things in and makes things justified in where they go. And there's not really a narrative to the book. It's a biography to an extent because it's like written by Lincoln, but there's no sidekick character. There's no central villain character. There's none of those elements in the book version. This is all of these aspects were made up for this movie. And the Mary Todd Lincoln thing, and now she's the de facto love interest. Wait, by the way, Alan Tudyk is in this movie. Always good to have Alan Tudyk in a movie, but he just disappears.
Yeah, he doesn't do anything.
He actually tweeted the other day that his role was significantly cut.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. Made me question. It felt like there were a lot of loose ends. How much longer the movie was that they filmed, and how much they butchered it in bringing it to what we've seen now, because it sets up these things and then they never follow through on them. It's very messy.
Yeah, Alan Tudyk's in this movie as Stephen Douglas, the opposing politician for Abraham Lincoln to go up against. And
they got a good laugh in the theater.
Yeah, and he literally and so did Harriet Tubman, but just the idea of having these characters. But he literally appears for like a scene, introduces who he is, then he disappears, and then he's like in one scene later on where he's like, I'm looking angry, and that's it. That's like his role in the movie. It's like, yeah, there's some poor editing going on here in terms of obviously a lot was taken out, but also I don't know if I want to see that version either, because the movie's so damn serious about everything. As much as I'm not a huge fan of the giant stampede action sequence, I still would have liked to have more crazy giant stampede action sequences. Well, at least the movie would be funner.
It could have been more knowing of its own, you know, comic, you know, potential.
Yeah.
That's all I want. I mean, I wanted a few jokes about vampires or something.
Yeah.
Like, it was so super, ooh, Vampire Hunter is like the equivalent of being president. Yeah. And it was, I don't know,
Actually, was, like one of the things that we talked about after the movie was, and I never read the book, so I was actually really kind of bummed out that they kind of didn't leave it as Abe Lincoln, a young Abe Lincoln, before he decided to go into politics as Vampire Hunter, because I was thinking, oh, it's gonna end when he decides to go into politics. But I was kind of really disappointed with how busy it got later with everything, and you know, just how everything ties into vampire hunting as what I forget who alluded to it earlier.
Because they're essentially like, well, it's okay. Now we've just redeemed the South because they actually weren't that bad. It was all vampires that did it. Like that's like what?
If you need another, if you need another reason to hate this, you know, slave owners, then I guess you have one because they're all vampires.
Yeah, we can look at the interview with Vampire already, but
yeah, I was kind of on the fence, but now I
no, don't see it. No, run, no. You had the right idea.
Vampires to slave owners, personally. one thing that kind of bothered me, you were mentioning the horse stampede scene,
yes.
And then there's also this elaborate climactic action sequence involving a train. And, you know, the budget for a summer movie was pretty low at $68 million because I can't imagine they would give a movie with this title any more than that. But it still seems like these scenes were designed for a bigger budget, so they look bad. I mean, they look very cartoony. There's obvious green screen work. Things don't seem to be rendered out fully. Like, they ran out of money to do these elaborate scenes, and that, you know, makes what could have been interesting and, you know, even original with that stampede scene, action sequences just fall on their face, I think.
I'll agree with the stampede sequence. I think the train sequence was better. I enjoyed that
sequence. It is a little better,
We're really gearing up for the video game that's going to follow, so they needed to create all these really hard levels.
Well, that's why, I mean, that's another problem with the movie. It does feel like I'm just watching a video game as opposed to really being engaged by what should be kind of, you know, a fun, if not exciting, action sequence that involves putting Abe and his giant spinning axe against vampires coming out. And yeah, it's just not, it's not as fun as it could be. It's not, I mean, it's not good in that manner. Even if it's not going to be like clever, like the book in terms of how it plays the story out, it could have at least been, well, at least we still have, like, really fun sequences that involve Abe fighting vampires, but we don't really get that. We get three huge action sequences. Two of them are memorable. One of them is maybe better accomplished out of all of them, but they're just not very fun overall. And it comes down to, yeah, like, the effects are kind of wonky. The movie's too serious, and it's the world building issue that I had in terms of kind of establishing how Abe is supposed to be, like, really, and Anthony Mackie to that extent too. Apparently Abe trained him in the off season for spinning axe lessons.
Well, they're sharing it. Yeah.
They're double team supreming it. It was amazing.
Even if you were just to say, okay, this is an action film, whatever, it's almost like in the final sequences, it's, like a lamer version of a Lethal Weapon, like a black and white buddy comedy with no comedy, like jumping from buildings and junk like that. No, not jumping from buildings, but that's what it reminded me of. Just a lamer, like Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, it feels like, yeah, it feels
no comedy.
I just gotta describe this in my interview. It feels like a generic action movie. Like it doesn't feel like it's an ambitious genre mashup idea. It just feels like, yeah, and then Abe, you know, he slays a vampire and, like, says something cool. It's just not very fun as a premise like this could be. The supporting cast is nothing in this movie. Like, maybe Dominic Cooper has, like,
Dominic most, Cooper's good.
Yeah, he's good. He's good. Like, he has he seems to be the most, beyond Benjamin Walker, he seems to be the most, like, knowing of the movie that he's in, where he's delivering lines with a sense of urgency, but also with a sense of, like, I'm playing this up kind of thing.
Yeah.
While, like, Anthony Mackie, he's just nothing in this movie. Like, he's supposed to be Abraham Lincoln's, like, best friend, but he's nobody.
He's like a prop. He's like what he is. He's a prop.
He's a prop, and who manages to have the possibly the greatest line in maybe the year, where he says, a fork, but...
Brilliant.
What's her name? Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Yeah, Ramona Flowers, exactly.
She's around as the obligatory love interest who gets really angry or really concerned for no apparent reason, and because she's very dim, apparently, because she didn't realize Dominic Cooper looks the same throughout the 40 years that she's known him. And
wearing those weird glasses.
Yeah. Actually, Dominic Cooper gets credit for also for channeling the look of Sherlock Holmes, because they seem to they have the exact same tailor, despite being in different parts of the world. And what's his name? Jimmy Simpson is also like another like comedic kind of co-actor here. One of the McPoyle brothers from Always Sunny. Rufus Sewell, who I love in Dark City and like in other things that I see him pop in, just because I like seeing Rufus Sewell get work. He's just so bland as the villain. He literally just shows up and he's like, "Here's my lines. I'm intimidating," and that's it. Like, there's nothing for him to do in this movie.
He exits actually really stupidly as well.
He does, yes.
Yeah. We were all bummed out about that. Yeah, we were expecting a bigger fanfare kind of thing.
Given the fact that vampires have special powers, and given Abe's he wasn't the best when it came to a certain special power that vampires have. Yeah. The one time it needed to, he was able.
Considering he'd been able to like evade everything for 5,000 years, and then the way that he goes out, it's like, are you serious, man?
Can I offer, I like Rufus Sewell as well, and if you want to see a good Rufus Sewell movie, watch The Illusionist, the film with Edward Norton.
Yeah, that's a good example.
It's such a great film, he's the baddie in that film, and it's a good movie.
Yeah. Now, to counteract that one, do not watch The Legend of Zorro, which has him as the baddie in that film.
Noted. Right now.
Ever played a
do
good
not
one?
Watch Sorry? Legend of Zorro.
That one was
Has
better
Rufus
than Abraham
ever
Lincoln.
Played a good guy?
Well, he's the protagonist in Dark City. He's
That's true.
He was in the Stars adaptation of the Ken Follett book series, Pillars of the Earth. He was the
Proven wrong.
He's also a good baddie in A Knight's Tale as well, but not a good guy. But I'm just pointing out other good roles that he's played. He's a good bad guy in A Knight's Tale. And I don't want to talk about The Tourist ever again, so I'm not going to.
Oh boy.
What other movie was that? Yeah, I mean he's not a huge actor, so. But yeah, I like seeing him in movies, but yeah, it's disappointing to see him play just another like I'm supposed to be intimidating here. But
I mean, while we're at it, Anthony Mackie has done some really great films too.
Yes,
Half Nelson, I love that film.
I do too. I'm a big.
And then the Hurt Locker as well,
which is unfortunate because he's been kind of given after the Hurt Locker, where he received obviously
gets some pretty good praise.
He's kind of been in these kind of supporting roles in random movies, like Man on a Ledge earlier in the year.
Oh, and he was in, what was that one about the robots?
Real Steel.
Real Steel.
Yeah, he kind of pops up in these kind of nothing.
But it's not a good role for him.
Yeah, it's certainly not his fault. It's just, he's getting this chance to be in bigger movies, but he's just kind of given, just be this kind of guy in the background for a couple scenes, kind of. Yeah.
Right.
And it's unfortunate.
He did do a Broadway play as well that he was quite good in. I think that was probably his best post Hurt Locker role. It's a shame that there's more opportunity for him on the stage than in films. He should be getting much bigger roles.
I'm hoping, and I'd be very satisfied if he was able to get
Black Panther.
Yeah, like exactly. That's exactly what I was gonna say. Black Panther.
I really liked last year's Adjustment Bureau.
I did too, actually.
Yeah,
I thought that was very cool. Underrated.
Yeah, it was very underrated.
I agree.
All right. So, anything else to say about Abraham? Anything else to say about Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter? Before we wrap up here.
No.
Okay. No. All right. So then let's get to
big hot mess.
Yes.
Okay. Actually, hold on. One thing. There's an action sequence in like Louisiana or something, like in Adam's like swamp palace. Actually, I'm just gonna go with that. In Adam's swamp palace, where like Abraham Lincoln's fighting vampires. Actually, it's one of the cooler vampire fighting sequences. And credit to this movie for I think the vampires actually looks kind of terrifying. Or they look like threatening vampires for a change, which is a nice thing to see. And happy that the movie was R-rated, even though it's not didn't really deliver too much on having like crazy gore sequences. But I mean,
there was a few that were
small victories,
dumb gore sequences.
Yeah, but some small victories for having a summer action movie that's R-rated and didn't shy away from having vampire blood and gore going on. But anyway,
it's just a shame it wasn't good.
Yeah, it's a shame that it wasn't good. But okay, so at Adam's Swamp Palace, Abraham Lincoln and Anthony Mackie are confronted with conflict, and suddenly Jimmy Simpson pops in with like his his freaking wagon train thing.
Carriage.
He bursts in. He like drifts into the room. Literally, he drifts in, yeah. And then like they
it's like a Lethal Weapon moment.
Yeah, they like immediately escape with like no harm, no foul. It was like the most ridiculous escape sequence of all time.
Was I the only one that was confused as to why the whole color palette changed in that scene?
Yes, right. Yes, it was like yeah. Good. It was literally like
the only one.
It was nice and brown and warm, and then it became dark and cold and blue again. It was like, what's happening?
Yeah, it's very unclear. I was baffled.
Yeah. All right. So with all that out of the way, where would we, on the same scale that we've used before, of course, where would we put Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter? Let's start with Maxwell.
I'd watch it on an iPhone in a porta potty.
Awesome. Really get the smell experience as well.
Yeah.
The Robert Rodriguez presents Smell-O-Vision, that experience. Spy Kids 4 joke. Abe?
HBO.
Marcus?
What's the lowest one?
Forget About It.
Forget all about this movie. Just don't even,
I would say if it was on HBO, you'd be like, yeah, all right, I'll watch Abraham Lincoln Vampire. That's real bad. Right after, like, the, you know, Alvin and the Chipmunk Shipwrecked comes on and, like, Abraham Lincoln Hunter's next.
Oh, man.
You're like, wow, that's a neat double feature. I'd be foolish not to watch this. That's where I'd
go. What an afternoon.
Okay, so that's, I think, where we are on Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. I'm sure Mark Homan's, like, desperately trying to get off this podcast so he can go see it right now. But we still have a few more things to go over. Box office this week. Each week we go over the box office totals and find out if our previous predictions were anywhere close. Let's start. Abe, do you recall what your box office prediction was last week?
I said Brave Number One, but I don't know if I said 50 or 60.
You said 60.
60, okay.
I went lowest. I said 55. Leah went highest with 75. And actually, Liz is our winner because she guessed 65. And Brave came in with a nice $66 million gross, which is pretty on par for Pixar movies in general, but you know, it did. That's nice. That's certainly pretty good. It's better than it doubled Cars 2's total. I believe it was like in the 30s last year when it in its opening weekend.
No, Cars 2 made in the 60s.
In the 60s, opening weekend. Are you sure?
Positive.
Are you?
Uh huh.
Okay, you nailed me. What was I thinking of then? Maybe Ratatouille. That was kind of low. I don't know. Whatever. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yes, Brave opened up to $66 million this weekend. So. You know, good for Brave. Madagascar 3 managed to come in second place. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, $16 million in third place. Kind of expected. Not an outright bomb, though, so that's, I guess, something for it. I mean, that's a movie that could have easily did nothing this weekend. But
speaking of doing nothing, unfortunately, Seeking a Friend for the End of the World opened very low.
It did, and
it's in less theaters.
It's R-rated. It has a darker premise. But it still managed to crack the top 10. That's nice for it.
Yeah.
You and I
both saw that, Maxwell?
Yeah, I loved it, actually.
I know Aaron loved it.
I did, I agree with
Aaron. I thought it was quite good.
I think there's some obvious issues I have with it that I could have taken more concern with if I didn't just love the movie overall with everything else that it did. And it was my favorite movie that came out this past week, if not most of the month, I believe, actually. I really like Seeking a Friend for the End of the World and would recommend that wholeheartedly. But also would say that the movie certainly doesn't try to compromise, which is something I really enjoyed about it in terms of it delivers on its title. So what else happened this week? Prometheus is in fourth place. It crossed 100 million, so that's nice for that movie. Snow White and the Huntsman, it's doing all right. Good enough because it's on my box office gamble list. That's nice.
Both of those are on my gamble list.
Same.
And
yeah.
Marvel's The Avengers is literally going to cross the $600 million mark in 2 hours or so. So, and Men in Black 3 is doing pretty well as well. Like, it's crossed $500 million worldwide. So, you know,
wow.
It's certainly it's not a flop, that's for sure. Despite it's not a huge success given that it had a high budget, but people did want to go and see a big Willy Weekend movie. So there you go.
Who can blame them?
All right. Man. Let's, Abe, do you think we have time?
Oh, I definitely think we have time. Do you think we have time?
I think we have a little bit of time for some games. That hastily assembled composition, of course, means it's time for games. And Let's I'll keep stalling because I'm trying to think of a game we should play. Let's play some games. Let's play the Amy Thistle game.
Yeah.
Okay, Abe likes this game apparently, even though he gets out most of the time early on. Okay.
Oh, no. Jurassic Park is there, buddy.
Okay, so you have your J. Okay, so Marcus and anyone else that's not familiar with the ABCs of movies, this is a game where we essentially name a we go in alphabetical order, fittingly, and we name the movie corresponding with the letter of the alphabet that we are on. So we will start with A, and I would say A is for Alien, and then it would be Abe's turn, and he would say a movie that starts with B, and then we proceed down that line. I will just kind of count it out. If you take more than like 3 seconds, you're out if you can't think of one.
Okay.
We will go in alphabetical order, which means that it will be myself, then Abe, then Mark, then Marcus, then Maxwell.
Did you also mention the
article? Oh, yeah, and the other important rule, no articles. Articles do not count, so you can't use like The Simpsons. The counts as T, so no, you have to use a movie that starts with the letter of the alphabet.
But you cannot use The Simpsons to count for S, too. Correct?
Correct. You cannot. Yes.
No, I made that mistake last time.
Okay. So, yeah. So, no. Yeah. No.
So, any title that begins with the letter the is just basically off limits.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you're on the letter T, right. Which you should have no trouble doing. So,
the pressure's on.
Okay. So, we will begin now, and I will begin with Alien Resurrection.
Brave.
Carrie.
Dogma.
Euro Trip.
Wow. I'm out. I can't. Wow. I forgot to think of an F.
What letter are we at?
F.
H.
F.
Oh, F. Fantastic with Mr. Fox.
Gandhi.
Hellboy.
Inception.
Jurassic Park.
Kill Bill.
Let Me In.
Monsters Incorporated.
Night Watch.
Once Upon a Time in America.
I'm out.
Out.
What's the letter? P or Q?
P.
P.
P. Pulp Fiction.
Oh, jeez.
Am I on Q?
Yes.
Quiz Show. Boom.
Ooh. Good movie.
Mic drop.
Raging Bull.
Maxwell.
Sound of Music.
Ooh, are we having a judge?
Is it Sound of Music or The Sound? It's just Sound.
Oh, it might be The Sound.
It's The Music. Sound of Music, it is.
Ah, all right.
Is it back to S then?
Yes.
Sunshine.
Teen Wolf.
You.
You is not a movie, eh? Mark, you are the winner of today. You've done it.
Woo! Go, Mark.
All right.
I won?
Yes, you won.
You
Yay!
Won.
Bravo.
Turn around. There's a present waiting for you.
Should be nothing.
Got you. All right. Let's move on then to what we're going to talk about next week, because that's how you play games. You're going to talk about, well, this movie, since G.I. Joe is not happening, we're going to talk about Seth MacFarlane's latest, which was moved into its place, the film Ted. The new, of course, Seth MacFarlane, his first directed theatrical feature, which stars Mark Wahlberg and his teddy bear companion. And, yeah, that's what we're going to talk about next week. Let's do a little box office predicting. What do we think Ted's going to do next weekend? What, do we even think it's going to be number one? R-rated? Let's see, what else comes out next week? Steven Soderbergh's male stripper movie, Things I Want to Say More. Steven Soderbergh's male stripper movie, Magic Mike, comes out. Medea's Witness Protection comes out.
Oh, no.
Oh, Jordan's waiting for that one like crazy.
Marcus, I know what you're going to go see.
Not that.
And I believe People Like Us, the Chris Pine, Elizabeth Banks movie, also comes out next weekend. So, yeah, like there's like four movies coming out next weekend. Oh, God, there is a Medea movie, though. That kind of to screw into things, whether that'll be number one or not. So, yeah, Marcus, on the show, we tend to like to predict what place we think the next week's movie will come in and with how much money. Okay. So if anyone has a guess for that right now.
For Ted?
For Ted, yes.
Ted.
Probably in second place. I think that male stripper movie's gonna beat it out.
Over Medea, you think?
Hopefully. In a perfect world.
And yeah, there is Brave is still out as well. Like, I mean,
yeah, I think Brave will be number one again.
Think so?
Yeah, and Ted and Madea will battle it out for second and third place.
All right, let's get back on track then. So, Mark, do you think Ted? Where do you think Ted will land?
I'll move Ted back to three.
Okay, and
back to three, and maybe I don't know, 50, 40, 40 mil. I think it'll be pretty big.
All right, 40. Okay. I actually have it. I think it's a dark horse from my summer box office week.
Cool.
Okay. Maxwell, what do you think?
I don't think it's going to do that well. I think it'll be all right, maybe high teens, but I just don't see it hitting big. The R rating is a tough hurdle, and I don't know if that many adults want to see a movie about a teddy bear, and Family Guy's not as popular as it once was, but I could be wrong.
What place do you think it'll land?
Third.
Third? And what are you thinking, like 15, something like that?
High teens, 18, 19.
18, 19, all right. Mark?
I'm going to say second. I think Brave will be number one, and Ted will come in at number two. And I'm going to say 20. I kind of am with Maxwell, although I'm saying a higher total. I don't think it's going to be a very big film.
All right. Dave?
Damn, that was a good guess, Mark. I'm going to say third, and I'll say 24.
I'm curious. This is a very curious weekend to be. I think Brave will most likely be number one next weekend. I think it's a legitimate toss up between Madea, maybe, because that. I mean, those movies, they do it. They make their monies. But I mean, Tyler Perry's movie. I don't know. I don't think I don't think they've been consistently number one lately, though. That said, so. But the Madea. The Madea movies tend to do stronger than like his other ones, I believe.
Yeah, too. But there's groups. I already know groups of like women that are gonna go see this Magic Mike movie.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I'm aware of that too. And it is a strong year for Channing Tatum. So I mean, it's very
much. It's in a lot more theaters than Madea's is also.
That's true as well. Yeah. That all this said, I do think Ted's going to be second place. That's where I'm coming down on it. Mm. And I think 25 is maybe a strong guess.
Sounds like I went too high. Maybe I'll move mine down to 30.
That's fine. All out.
I went too high.
We'll allow it.
All out.
Thank you.
So all out. First time mulligan.
Generally.
First time mulligan. I'll allow it.
There we go.
One thing I wanted to point out, because I tweeted this the other day and it got retweeted like a bunch of times. I said that the ads for Magic Mike should start blowing people's minds by mentioning that it's from the director of Traffic and Aaron Brockovich. So yeah. that I think that'd be amazing to start doing that in the marketing. Because I don't think even though Steven Soderbergh's not exactly a household name, it's not like people like inherently know that Steven Soderbergh's doing this movie about male strippers with Channing Tatum as the lead.
Well, could also say from the director of Bubble and The Girlfriend Experience. That'll get butts in seats.
Yeah, it would. It would. Yeah, it would. Exactly. Or from the thought-provoking studio that's brought you Che and Solaris. I think those would. All right, so those are our predictions for the box office. We'll see how that works out. And that's going to bring us into the end of the episode. It's been a long one, but it's been an enjoyable one. Unfortunately, we have to end. So you can find more of my work in my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com, where you can find all my written movie reviews, as well as at whysoblue.com for my reviews there, as well as reviews of Blu-rays from myself and the other fine folks at Why So Blue. You can also follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/AaronsPS3. Abe?
Hey, you can find more fun stuff at walrussmiths.blogspot.com, two animals, walrussmiths.blogspot.com, and twitter.com/walrussmiths.
Mark?
You can follow more of my work on my personal blog, fastfilmreviews.wordpress.com. That's fastfilmreviews, all one word, .wordpress.com. And then you can also follow me on Twitter, mark_Hoban.
Maxwell?
You can find my writings and film reviews at theractfocus.com or follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/MaxLHad.
And Marcus?
You can find my reviews at – you can go to Examiner and type in Marcus Robinson with Marcus with a K. And you can go to movieswithmarcusonline.blogspot.com. I know it's a mouthful, but you can go there too. With a K. Marcus with a K.
Great. Yeah, and I'll spell all this out in the show notes as well. Yeah, so you can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe on iTunes. All of them are located there for free, of course. And you can also locate them on hhwlod.com, where you can find all the episodes of our show, as well as the other shows in that lovely podcast network, which includes the Legion of Dudes podcast, which actually celebrated their 200th episode the other day. And yeah, good for them. And, and certainly, you know, it's very nice to be a part of the HHWLOD podcast network. We're very, very fortunate to, you know, have been brought into their group of podcasts. So, you know, good kudos on them. They're really a bunch of cool guys. And of course, you can find most of the newest episodes and some exclusives on outnow.podomatic.com. You can also, of course, email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. As I mentioned earlier in the episode, towards the beginning, there's a Pixar contest going open to people that have not won prizes already. All you have to do is email us your favorite Pixar character and why in a couple sentences to a paragraph. And, you know, first one that gets through, you're going to win a nice little Pixar package. And speaking of, you know, just things you can, you know, get out of going supporting the show, of course, you can help out Liz's film project, Bread and Butter Movie, or Kickstarter project. And if you donate $25, you can have a chance to be on the show with us and, you know, bullshit about movies and do the best you can. So, finally, follow our pages, facebook.com/outnowpodcast and twitter.com/outnow_podcast, where you can, of course, find all the latest updates for our episodes and other various things that we put on there, including all the constant blogging that Abe does in particular. And
workout.
Yep, it sure it is. And of course,
I really want to highly recommend Abe's Twitter account. It's really fascinating.
It's a nonstop stream of consciousness from Abe. Really, it's like everything that passes through his mind is on
beautiful gems that just come out.
It's like listening to a journal that never stops. It's like CNN. That's what it is.
It's kind of like Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Exactly. It's just like
the book.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go.
Yep, exactly. All right, so next week, Marky Mark takes on a teddy bear. Things I wish I could say more in life. And until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
If I could just jump back in quick, I'd
say... No, you can't. Abe? No, I'm just kidding.